coming up on New York Now?
It breaks my heart. Every parent has to worry about this. Every law enforcement official has to worry about this. These are our kids.
A look at the push against the legalization of recreational marijuana.
We took an oath as sheriffs of New York State to keep our communities safe. And by legalizing marijuana, our communities will become less safe.
And Jimmy Vielkind of the Wall Street Journal joins us for analysis.
This budget, on the one hand, is going to be one constrained by revenues. So some of the bigger asks and the bigger fiscal asks are going to be answered by the numbers themselves. And then the question is, what policy items do get in?
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. A state budget deal is progressing, which is more than can be said for Kirsten Gillibrand's presidential hopes, according to a new poll.
We'll touch on that at the Reporters Roundtable. Our headlines start with Governor Cuomo's angry message to POTUS.
Good afternoon.
On Tuesday, Governor Cuomo held a Red Room press conference after issuing a letter to President Trump where he again called for the federal government to fund the Gateway Tunnel Project. The well-traveled rail corridor under the Hudson River connects New York and New Jersey and was hit hard by Superstorm Sandy in 2012. The letter came in response to a new federal report that put a medium to low priority on the project.
It is a disaster waiting to happen. And everybody knows it, and nobody denies it. In their project description, they say it was significantly damaged. But it's a low to medium priority and is not going to receive funding. End of story. I went into the tunnels. I took videos. I sent the videos to the president. I went and met with the president. He looked at the videos. He confirmed what he saw in the video was a significant level of deterioration.
Cuomo called the low priority label political retaliation for states that did not vote for the president in 2016. In other infrastructure-related news, advocates rallied at the Capitol Monday to demand lawmakers pass congestion pricing, which would charge a fee to motorists driving into Lower Manhattan.
We are in dire straits in my district because parents and all working people are taking longer to get to work. This is something I talked about on the campaign trail often, which was the fact that because parents are later to pick up their children, they end up having to pay more late fees. This is a real issue for working class New Yorkers. Not only do we need congestion pricing, not only do we need Brad Hoyleman's pied-à-terre tax, not only do we need to expand the millionaire's tax, we need to ensure that there's a real lockbox in order to make sure that the governor can't use the MTA like an ATM anymore.
Advocates highlighted the current overcrowding issue by passing out cans of sardines to people on the third floor of the Capitol. The Assembly and Senate this week passed legislation to expand the use of speed cameras in New York City school zones and establish a pilot program in Buffalo. A 2013 law created a five-year project which set up cameras in 20 school zones. A report from the New York City DOT found that there was a 60% drop in speeding infractions in areas where cameras had been installed.
I'm holding in my hands a change saw, and it's not for a joke. Preston Lau, a young boy sitting right here in the front row, gave this to me during my campaign last year. Preston, come right here. And he said, you know, when you win and when we're able to turn the cameras back on, we're going to have a change saw party. Yay. So I brought the chainsaw because, you know, as As someone whose own family has suffered a loss to traffic violence, you know, this is an issue that's deeply personal to me, but I've been incredibly inspired by the advocacy of Preston and everyone in Families for Safe Streets who have really taken this cause, made it their own, and put a human face to this issue. You know, we talked about some of the stats and figures. We talked about the data points, 63% reduction in speeding. But until you look in someone's eye and they tell you that they lost a loved one to a traffic crash, to traffic violence, you can't really fathom what those figures mean. Figures mean nothing without the human stories behind them. And so today we are, you know, frankly, depoliticizing the issue of pedestrian safety, and we are reaffirming once and for all that no pedestrian should live in fear of crossing the street, regardless of their age, whether it's a parent or a senior or a pedestrian of any age.
The new legislation expands the number of school zones to 750 within New York City, where the cameras operate from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. And finally, Democratic lawmakers held a hearing on the public financing of elections in New York State, specifically Governor Cuomo's proposal, which would provide a 6-to-1 match for the first $175 of each contribution.
As the member with the highest percentage of small donations in our side of the house, I want to see the kind of system that allows more people like me to run for office. My colleagues who did it with small donations can tell you many of us still carry debt because we wanted to make sure that we were listening to the voices of the people whose doors we were knocking on, of our community, and not of the big donors, not of the corporate donors, not of the developers, because we wanted to make sure that when we were governing, it was the voice of the people that was leading us.
A number of freshman legislators appeared at the hearing. Alessandra Biaggi, who knocked off former IDC leader Jeff Klein of the Bronx, was asked why this legislation is necessary if so many incumbents, including well-known and well-funded lawmakers like Carl Marcellino and Kemp Hannan, were defeated last November.
I was able to beat my opponent because I knocked on tens of thousands of doors, because I had a fiance who paid for my law school loans, because I had a family that let me live there rent-free for over a year, because I had a family that fed me, because I'm four generations in District 34 and have deep ties there. I am an anomaly in the system, and I realize that. But I'm an anomaly in a way that I think creates the pathway for good. And so while I do feel very grateful for the other anomalies, like Senator Myrie and Senator Ramos and Senator Salazar and our other colleagues who won in the primary, we are anomalies in the system, and we don't want our wins to just be a one-time thing.
Cuomo's legislation would lower the contribution limit for candidates. For example, someone vying for a statewide office would see it reduced from $44,000 to $25,000. After the executive budget is released in mid-January, you begin to see the formation of coalitions looking to advocate or push back against certain pieces of legislation. One particular group is getting louder and louder in their effort to try and stop one proposal from making its way into the budget, one that seemed unthinkable just 2 years ago.
In the winter of 2017, the governor was asked about his position on the legalization of marijuana.
You've smoked marijuana. You've said that you've done so.
Yes.
Why not recreational marijuana? Lots of New Yorkers smoke marijuana.
Yeah. Well, the flip side argument, as you know, is it's a gateway drug, and marijuana leads to other drugs. And there's a lot of proof that that's true.
Fast forward to this year's budget presentation, and Andrew Cuomo changed his mind.
Legalize adult use cannabis.
Let's go back a bit first. The governor commissioned a study last year led by the Department of Health to assess the impact of a marijuana program. It found the positive impacts of a regulated market in the state would outweigh the negative. Cuomo then announced a work group to provide advice on the legislative and regulatory approaches needed to, quote, protect public health, provide consumer protection, ensure public safety, address social justice issues, and capture and invest tax revenue. In his official budget proposal, cannabis would be legal for adults over the age of 21 and generate approximately $300 million in tax revenue. A few weeks later, we got a look at the first press conference in Albany for those on the other side of the issue, where there was a familiar theme.
Hit the pause button here. Throw a flag down on the play.
Pump the brakes. Let's get this out of the budget.
Most of the groups represented don't want it passed at any time, but all are opposed to legalization making its way into the state's spending plan.
This is not a budget issue. Okay, we already know that, you know, the there has been an announcement of a deficit. The small amount of money they could possibly get from this would never close any type of budget deficit. So this is not a budget issue. This has to be pulled out of the budget. You know, after that, you know, we have months of session where legislators and the governor's office and other health officials and other state agencies can really have an impact in this conversation. This cannot be rushed.
Among the groups against is the New York State Sheriff's Association.
My message is very simple. It's very direct. We took an oath as sheriffs of New York State to keep our communities safe. And by legalizing marijuana, our communities will become less safe. That's a clear, strong message. We know, just by looking at some of the statistics, we know that the biggest one that stands out is that people will die as a result of folks making the destructive decision of using marijuana and then operating a motor vehicle. It's the deputies, the police officers, the men and women of our agencies that are going to be knocking on the door at 3 o'clock in the morning, telling a mom or dad that their child has just died as a result of a motor vehicle accident because someone made the destructive decision to smoke marijuana and then operate a motor vehicle. And to have a clear conscience, I cannot stand quiet and allow this to move forward without doing all we can to stop this proposal to legalize the use of recreational marijuana.
The chief of police for a town on Long Island referred to Cuomo's own words in 2017 in arguing against the legalization.
You said that in 2017 marijuana was a gateway drug. Now it's not here in 2019. Is that a reference to how Governor Cuomo described it in 2017?
Absolutely, yes. Out of his word, out of his mouth directly. And we've had no proof that it is not. We all still know, parents still know, it's a gateway drug. They try cigarettes, marijuana, then they go to the opioids and continue on to harder stuff.
Also coming out strong against is the New York State PTA.
It breaks my heart. Every parent has to worry about this. Every law enforcement official has to worry about this. These are our kids.
If the legal age is 21, why is there this worry about trickle down to teenagers? Well, there's an organization called SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana. They distributed these boxes lined with statistics about why legalization would be bad. And inside, candy. Products like these, they say, are specifically marketed to kids, despite the age restriction.
We have Cookie Monster being used as an advertisement just last month for an edible, for a marijuana edible. Cookie Monster being used. Okay, that's not adult use. That is clearly targeted at our youth. Okay, and that is what this industry is doing. That is what it looks like.
The fears and skepticism over the legalization may be working. In the last few weeks, the county executives, both Democrats from Nassau and Suffolk on Long Island, said they will opt out of allowing sales, which the governor's proposal does allow. Other counties are considering as well. Many legislators are still openly grappling with the issue.
The governor really wants to push this through. He wants to get it through in the budget. Our leaders in the assembly and maybe the Senate have been a little apprehensive on that, on the marijuana issue, because of questions like that. Every day I think of this and I think of another question. How does it affect this and how does it affect the workforce? How does it, I mean, because marijuana testing is so, for lack of a better word, vague. I mean, you can have it in your system for from 7 to 10 to 30 days after that. So how do we deal with that?
Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says his conference is considering the governor's proposal, but still has a lot of questions.
To me, the first two aspects of adult use marijuana have to be the decriminalization and then also creating wealth and opportunities in the communities who have been hit hard. Particularly if these are the communities that have been denied housing, people who have been caught up in the criminal justice system have been denied housing, denied job opportunities, mechanisms that reverse that have to be dealt with first.
Finally, this week, the governor dropped the projected revenue from the sale of marijuana in this year's budget proposal, likely killing any passage happening before next week's deadline. But groups like the New York State PTA say their effort to push against any budgetary inclusion isn't finished.
I've seen lots of things rise from the dead in this building. So it's time that we're going to continue to push this issue.
Moving right on in into our New York Now poll question. Are you in favor of legalizing adult use marijuana? I'm sure we'll get lots of opinions on this one. Let us know by logging on to our website, nynow.org. Last time out, we asked if you supported a pied-à-terre tax for non-primary homes worth more than $5 million. And the overwhelming majority said yes. Christopher in New York City, watching on WNET, says, I've lived in the East Village for 30 years and have seen it change to a neighborhood of transient NYU students and ghosts who use property as investments, only using them a few weeks a year, if that. And finally, Victor in Queens told us, I'd support one on non-primary homes worth more than $1 million. Housing should not be an investment vehicle for billionaires. It should be there for working people to live in. Thanks to all those who took the time to vote. We hope to hear from you again at nynow.org. It's where you can find all of our past programs and links to us on social media, including Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. While navigating the site, you'll find a link to the Capital Confidential blog. It's also available at timesunion.com. All right, we welcome in our colleague and friend from the Wall Street Journal, Jimmy Vielkind. And gentlemen, before we move on to other topics, in an interview with Cannabis Wire, longtime Staten Island Senator Diane Savino said that there's absolutely not the votes for legalization if excluded from the state budget. You think that's fair, Jimmy?
There's certainly problems, and there are many unresolved issues on the legalization of adult use cannabis. On the one hand, you have the concerns of opponents, which we just saw. That includes ideas that it will increase teen usage and sort of arguments we've heard elsewhere. But there's also a tension that I reported on this week about whether licenses should be, whether there should be space in the licensing structure for the existing medical marijuana companies. There's a tension between the governor's proposal and the proposal put forward by Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes of Buffalo. Those details are still being ironed out, and sort of this two-front war is creating more difficulties.
So, Jimmy, turning to the state budget kind of writ large, we're now talking about a little bit less than 10 days out from what is supposed to be the budget deadline of the end of March. I have always found this period to be kind of the spookiest in the budget negotiation because nobody seems to know anything. The pieces appear to be moving all the time. I mean, is that your sense of where things are during this slightly more fraught budget season?
Yes. We're hearing mixed signals. Legislative leaders are talking about good progress. They say that things are moving along rather nicely. At the same time, there doesn't seem to be resolution on some of the major policy items that will maybe be in the budget or will not be in the budget. Lawmakers that I've spoken to have indicated that the governor is sort of throwing statements around to sort of mix the pot, scramble people as he moves into sort of the final phase of negotiations. But this budget, on the one hand, is going to be one constrained by revenues. So some of the bigger asks and the bigger fiscal asks are going to be answered by the numbers themselves. And then the question is, what policy items do get in? Do you finish criminal justice changes and moving away from cash bail as part of the budget? Do you create a system for legalizing and regularized marijuana as part of the budget? Do you make permanent the property tax cap, et cetera? So there's still a soup going on. Frankly, I think it's not necessarily spooky, but it's certainly early to even really know what's going on.
With revenue in mind, you saw a push by large gaming concerns this week with the idea that the state would move up the calendar for approving casinos in the immediate vicinity or even in New York City. Currently, under the current gaming structure, new casinos are supposed to be exclusive to upstate New York through 2023. They'd like to see that a lot sooner.
That's right. And the gaming companies, including two who have VLT, video lottery terminal parlors, Genting, which operates Resorts World in Queens near the Aqueduct Racetrack, mm-hmm. and MGM, which recently purchased the Empire City Casino, that's another VLT parlor in Yonkers, they say if you give us the green light, we can be up and running within, say, 6 months. It'll increase the revenues that we're paying to the state, and they'll pay a license fee. Into that mix, you also have Las Vegas Sands Corporation. This is the casino company run by billionaire and prolific Republican donor Sheldon Adelson. It says, open up the process, take new bids. We believe that the state could generate $500 million per license. So that's $1.5 billion in upfront cash, and then whatever additional revenue would be wrought from new casino activities. The problem there is you would inevitably sap economically some of the upstate casinos. Mm-hmm. And all three companies say that they're willing to negotiate to come up with some deal that either provides financial assistance to those casinos or helps make them whole in some way. We should note that those four casinos are not performing to expectation.
Right, exactly.
They're not doing well. So either eliminating some debt load or refunding some licensing fees could make that more financially feasible. Politically speaking, this is, to me, the kind of thing that ends up showing up in a budget bill with 2 hours before the vote is taken.
Yeah.
And people seem to know that that is how things work in Albany. But we've heard skepticism both from Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie and from Governor Cuomo about this process.
This brought Governor David Paterson back to the Capitol
yes.
this week.
That's right. He's advising Sands on their New York efforts. I spoke to him last week, and I spoke to him again this week in the Capitol. He says that New York City residents are already gambling. They're already going to other states. Why not capitalize on the opportunity, and why not create jobs? He also makes the point, which is more resonant after the collapse of the proposed Amazon campus in Queens, that these companies don't want subsidies. They want to bring money to the state, not take it from it.
One thing that is still in the mix, another big complex issue that might or might not be included in the budget, is public financing of campaigns. There was a hearing on this issue, a joint legislative hearing, and you heard Blair Horner saying, look, we hear all your objections, all the concerns. Blair Horner, a longtime good government advocate, saying now is the time. If we don't do it now, we might never get it done. You know, it's time to make history on moving forward with a public matching program.
Yeah, that's another one where you would think a Democratic troika where all parties have declared their support would just let it sail right through. That, of course, wasn't the case in 2009 and 10, the last time we had an all-Democratic state government. Of course, the circumstances were a little different then, and the political world and the nature of money in politics was a little different back then. What we're seeing is reticence among the state assembly. Lawmakers in that chamber tell me that publicly people have voted in the past for systems of public campaign finance with basically the knowledge that they wouldn't become law, that Republicans who controlled the Senate would never take up a bill. Now they are saying privately, well, there are lots of concerns. What about someone whose political beliefs I don't support running and getting matching funds? What about independent expenditure committees?
That Carl Hastie mentioned that to
Russia?
Us last week.
Yep.
Right. And so in this mix, there doesn't seem to be urgency. On the other hand, you have in the state Senate a cadre of younger lawmakers, many of whom were outspent massively, as our colleague Bill Mahoney pointed out in a piece, during their successful primary challenges to incumbent senators. They feel that the money in politics problem is fundamental, and it's fundamental to gaining changes in other policy areas.
We've got about a minute left. We also want to mention a Quinnipiac poll that looked at how New Yorkers feel about many of the presidential candidates. Joe Biden, amid the Democratic field, I think performed the best. Surprising numbers, I would say, for, Kirsten Gillibrand, who is now a declared candidate, who is underwater in terms of favorable, unfavorable ranking, 29 favorable, 35% unfavorable. Also underwater, Governor Cuomo, even though he's not running, 42, 45. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, not running as well, of course, 31, 38 favorable, unfavorable.
Yeah, what was most interesting to me about that poll and that ranking was not the favorable, unfavorable for Senator Gillibrand or others, but the amount of unknowns. So, for example, Senator Gillibrand was unknown to 35% of New York voters who were surveyed in that poll.
Which is incredible.
Yeah. Senator Gillibrand has been a statewide elected official for almost exactly 10 years now, since she was appointed by former Governor David Paterson. She was just reelected in November by a very, very
easily
wide
more
margin.
Votes than any other candidate in the race, I believe, election cycle.
But if you look at, for example, Biden, Bernie Sanders, these are nationally known figures. But Senator Elizabeth Warren was unknown to just 30% of New York voters, which means that more New Yorkers know of Elizabeth Warren than they know of Kirsten Gillibrand. She was also underwater, 31-38 among voters in terms of favorability. We know that on Sunday, Senator Gillibrand is going to have a formal kickoff for her campaign. She's having a rally outside Trump Tower. What we haven't seen in her campaign thus far is the ability to draw big crowds or an attempt to draw big crowds. When Senator Kamala Harris of California announced her campaign in Oakland, she had 20,000 people attend.
Can't fit a lot of people on Fifth Avenue, I don't think.
But we'll see how many people come.
All right, trenchant analysis, as always, from Jimmy Vielkind of the Wall Street Journal. Thanks very much for coming in. And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks very much for watching. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. We'll see you next weekend right here on your local PBS station.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation.